of course, we're going to deal with the third and fourth quarterly of Kula. And I just want to remind members, tomorrow we're going to deal with the two quarterlies of IPED and the Civilian Secretariat, as well as the China report. Thank you very much, Pilot. We appreciate. Without further ado, I'm going to then ask the Deputy Chairperson and this Director to introduce the delegation. Thank you. Microphone, please.
Let me try again. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. The council members who are here today, myself in my capacity as acting chairperson, and Mr. Zwile Zulu, who is the chairperson of our FinCom, and also one of the board members. We try to be prudent when we visit the council and not bring the board members, but bring them according to their portfolios. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Director, your delegation. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson. On behalf of management, we've got myself, the CFO, and Mr. Thabo Cooper, who's our new PLO, parliamentary liaison officer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask the honorable members to introduce themselves. I'm going to start from the side of Mr. Markey. Thank you.
My name is Jerome Markey, a member of this committee.
I'm Philip Mshongo, member of the committee.
I'm Diane Chakabalad, also member of the committee.
Dumelang bagaetsho, leina la ka ke nna Angie Molebo, ke leloko la committee, ke a leboga.
Very much, honorable members. Without further ado, we will go now to the director for the two reports. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will be presenting the key highlights, which is normally the briefing of what we intend to do and what has been happening. And also, we'll go into the third quarter, predetermined third quarter on the financial performance, the fourth quarter. I will allow my colleague, the CFO, to also present the financial performance from the both quarters. In terms of the key highlights, Chairperson, we will be conducting an audit of funds within the private security industry. We've already received the data from Central Firearm Registry as we speak, so we're of course going to work on that audit. We will also be very soon publishing regulations on the use, issue, use, and possession of firearms, which will assist us in terms of regulating much more closely the issue of firearms within the private security industry. So we're calling for comments from the industry and interested stakeholders to help us shape regulation forward in that regard. Chairperson, one of the other things that we will also be doing very soon is to review our funding model and introducing the Private Security Industry Levies Act. And reason, Chairperson, amongst others, when we brief you on the fourth quarter, you will also be briefed on the impact of the model that we've been using, which we believe at this time that it has come to its end of life. In other words, we are unable to move forward to raise the funding of the entity using the old annual fees, and so we will be proposing the introduction of the Private Security Industry Levies Act. As you might know, it was enacted in 2000. So those are the highlights, Chairperson. Moving to the third quarter, Chairperson, and I think the fourth quarter, perhaps it might have been easy to my apologies, Chairperson, must have been easy to deal with the fourth quarter, which will also cover the third quarter, but let me just the presentation is already there. On the fourth quarter, Chairperson, we've got three programs. In terms of program one, you will see that we achieved all our targets. In terms of program two, at the third quarter, we achieved about five of the targets as opposed to 7-2 were not achieved, but we will go deeper into the reasons for that. In terms of the third program. We achieved 8 out of the 11, so 3 was our saying at the time. Let me allow my colleague to deal with the financial report in terms of third quarter.
Thank you. I'm on slide number 9. Notice that we have a registration fees that are above by 27%. And then if you notice in the last quarter, the registration fees, you'll notice when we go to the fourth quarter, the registration fees will increase. And the cost report are at 31% is people that were training. And fines and penalties are 115 above budget. This is mainly to the introduction of new regulation, the amount that we charge on fines. Annual fees are 1% below budget, and we've been saying this the whole year that we have built for registered security officers. However, we noticed that there's multiple employment. And sale of goods is below by 48% at quarter three. However, when you go to quarter four, we've intensified our strides to ensure that sale of goods picks up. It moved to 19%. It's because we were issuing ID cards on only employed security officers. And then our expenditure is 2% above budget. This is mainly because we had our transformation project that was above by 32%. And also the seminar is similar, it's an expenditure congruent to the travel and accommodation. It's mainly due to the same project, transformation project. And when you look at the registration fees at 27%, and then when you register, you do fingerprints, that's why we have 20% above budget with the operational costs, where it's an inherent cost where you're supposed to do registration, then you have to do fingerprints. Legal fees are 29% above budget. This is mainly due to the prosecutors that we are utilizing for our in-house cases. And the next slide is slide number 10. We have analyzed our cash flow analysis. So in terms of our cash flow collection, we targeted 80%. And then cash flow as a percentage of billing is at 57%. We take our billing on annual fees because that's the only amount that we bill. The other one is not being billed. It's collected as and when a person comes to the office. And then it's 67%. Cash flow as a percentage of budget is also 66%. And then the total amount billed as the total amount projected on budget is 100%. It's 99% at quarter three. And then we'll go to quarter four. Quarter four, if you look at that pie chart, we indicate that we have achieved 77%, and then we have not achieved 14%, which is 2 and 1 item. So it's 3 items that are not achieved. But we're hoping that as at year end, after the audit, there's an item, the KPI called unqualified audit. We would change it to be achieved. So we're still waiting for the audit outcome. And then when I go back to the revenue, as is at 8% as at above 8% as at the end, you can now see that the registration fees have moved from 27% now to 30%. It's we're registering more, and we're also analyzing the average registration. It moved it's now 10,000 per month. Cost report have already also increased, and you notice now the fines are moved from 115 to 148, and this is mainly to the case in Prasa, and also the increase in the amount that we are charging in this current financial year. Annual fees are still below by 1%. It's mainly due to the people that are employed in the multiple organizations.
and sale of goods has drastically increased. They are now below, no longer at 48%, they are now at 19%. So we have communicated to our stakeholders and we lifted the, now we were issuing the ID cards to everybody that was registered with CIRA. And then on expenditure, it has increased to 10%, and this is one of our key challenges that we must we are looking at. If you recall, at quarter three, we're 2% above. Now it's 10% above budget. So when we travel and accommodation has increased because we now add in the last quarter budget. That's why it is now 24%, no longer at those above 50%. And seminars is due to the transformation project and also the when we do our consultation of annual fees. Fingerprints, I've spoke about it earlier, it's an inherent one when we do our registration, legal fees at 33%. And now we have a deficit of 4 million. And when we recall, when we were at quarter three, we had a surplus of almost 20 million because at year end, we now, as the CEO indicated, that our model is now becoming redundant. We collect and as in the first 2 months of the financial year, when it goes down, in the last month of the financial year, the collection slows down. But also, we must also realign our model in the current and refine our funding model. That's the reason we're having a deficit. We've been projecting it over the quarters, but the strike did not yield the desired outcome. And then slide number 16, that is our program one. Program one, we are we provide leadership. Can I move to slide number 17? Slide 17, the KPI is unqualified audit opinion. We are waiting for the review of the internal control by AGSA. We're hoping that we'll receive unqualified audit opinion and then we'll turn into the issues in no time. And then percentage of revenue collected, it's a consequence. If you look at that 1% that I've been saying that we were, and our target for the financial year, it was 80%. However, we collected 72%. And when you look at it, it's 90% of our debt is for small security officers within 0 to 5, and then they are unable to service their debt in time. And then the next one, it's the critical IT infrastructure. This KPI assists us to service our security officers. So it's something that we monitor on time because if there's a downtime, we'll have challenges and we'll lose revenue. And then also we also have percentage of the performance management system implemented. So we have a policy that we have drafted and we have KPIs inside the performance management system. It's contracting, training, and empowering our employees, so we have achieved that. And the next one, the CEO will do the next one.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next one is the law enforcement targets, Chairperson. In the fourth quarter, you will see that we had an annual turnover of annual target of 5,400 inspections. In that quarter, we had an annual target of 1,215. We've overachieved by 530 inspections of the lead there on the businesses. The second one is the number of security officers that were inspected, that is individuals. You recall that in that quarter we had 6,980, we overachieved by 982, so we did 7,912. On the investigation side as well, we had an 83% target, we did 84%, and that was mainly due to additional staff that we deployed in that area. On the criminal cases that we open against non-compliant SFPs, which is security service providers, we had a target of 93%, we achieved 96%. On the number of businesses licensed to possess firearms, those are the inspections that we conduct on those focus areas, we targeted 270, We stepped up our inspections there. We did 354, and mainly because we had additional assistance inspectors that were appointed in that quarter, towards that quarter. The percentage of non-compliant SSPs that were prosecuted, Chairperson, we had a target of 90%. We achieved a target of 90%. I'm sure perhaps after the audit, this number might change, but at the moment it's standing at 90%. In terms of the number of regulations that we needed to draft, we targeted to have two new regulations that we drafted. We have achieved that number. We've compiled two draft regulations which were submitted to the Office of the Minister and subsequently published. We are awaiting comments and should be moving ahead with those. In terms of Program 3, Chairperson, which is where we actually had many problems, Program 3 looks after communications, stakeholders, a sub-program that deals with registration and training, as well as research. In that quarter, Chairperson, we had an annual target of 140 public awareness programs. Year-to-date, we actually achieved by target, but in that quarter, we did 10 public awareness programs, but the year-to-date target was achieved. On the second one, Chairperson, we had an average target of 15 days to target in terms of registration of businesses. In that quarter, we were able to achieve that annual target, and I think if you look at the year-to-date target, was not achieved at that point. When you look at the turnaround time with regard to registrations of security officers, you know, that met all the requirements, we had an average of 10 days that we needed to achieve. I think the target there was about 15 days. We go to 10 days, which is a plus. On the registration side, Chairperson, rolling out of certificates and active security officers, and the annual target was 60. This quarter, we needed to target 30%. And because of the communication to enforce the non-registration of non-issuing of certificates, those that had old certificates, we were able to achieve that by 112, but that came with a lot of problems. As you might recall, Chairperson, we had the problems of queues in almost all our offices. So the registration certificates, the rollout of businesses, we also, that was 142 that percent that we achieved as opposed to we targeted 10% that we achieved. Chairperson, if you look at the industry training, we needed to build capacity, to cloud building capacity projects. In that quarter, the target was 2, and the 2 was achieved. On the percentage of training security service providers currently registered with CIRA, accredited with the NQF qualification, that is now the percentage of those training providers that are registered with us, but also registered on the SAFITA side. Chairperson, we've had a number of problems in terms of validating the data. Eventually, we were not able to achieve the targets by about 4%, and mainly due to, we are told, the reluctance of service providers on the other side to actually move on to the NQF side of things. We since detected that there were also other problems in terms of, the reason there was reluctance is because of the short nature of the accreditation that takes place on the SACITA side. But those issues are being addressed currently with SACITA. On the research side, Chairperson, we had the target of completed research topics, four of them, which I think we achieved. That quarter we had 2 we achieved. We had surveys that, 4 surveys per year. In that quarter we had 1 which was achieved. We had policy documents that needed to be completed. We had 4 of them. We had completed 5 in that quarter. I think we managed to get all of them approved. And the last one is with regard to the partnerships. Chairperson, we had 1 target of partnership that we had with institutions of higher learning. Unfortunately, this target was achieved slightly ahead of its own time. So by the time that we entered into negotiations, and I think inadvertently it was concluded in the year in which the target fell in the next year. So by the time we wanted to conclude the second leg, we were then told by our auditors that look, it would not be possible because we've already achieved this target. So basically, we shot ourselves on the foot there, and things moved quicker than. So that's the one aspect that we did not achieve in that aspect. I think the CFO will take us through the expenditure trends there.
Thank you. I'm on slide number 36. The slide number 36 reflects the past 8 years and 8 years revenue and expenditure growth. If you look, we constantly go into, there was a deficit of 23 million in 8 years ago, and we are currently back on the deficit of 4 million in this current financial year. And the reason for this, you can see that our growth, our funds revenue growth is a bit lower than the expenditure growth. So in financial terms, they would be saying our jaws, the alignment between the growth of the expenditure and the growth of your revenue, which is the budget in this case, should be the same so that you are able to fund your operation. But the analysis shows that our growth of revenue is less, and then the growth of our expenditure. If you notice, our expenditure, our revenue grew by 8%, and our expenditure is at 10%. So those are some of the things that we should look at to enhance the balance in there. So slide number 37 is financial performance. So you can see there that our actual revenue is above budget by 8%, and which equates to 17.8 million. However, it was not enough to cover all our operational expenses and also our non-cash items. It resulted in a 4 million deficit. And we noticed that we have a 23 million increase if we analyze our revenue. However, we need to double the increase in to cover our operational expenses. And the biggest source of our revenue had a negative variance of 1.7 million, which resulted in us projecting. We discovered that our security officers are employed by two security businesses, and accountability is not adequately done. And then when we go to slide number 39, our total expenditure to date amounts to 244. And then mainly because of our staff cost, we are a service-driven organization, and we want to capacitate especially our core business to ensure that enforcement is done. And then we also improved on postage and courier services, but we have regional offices, and then we have, during the time of audit, you'll find that there will be documents that are requested by the AG, and then we must produce. So we reduce the overnight courier, so we plan in time so that we are, postage and courier is part of our cost containment measures implemented, and it's now below budget. The bank charges, it's mainly due to the cash deposits that our security officers are doing when they renew or pay for the service that they require us to render. However, we are negotiating with our bank to ensure that the rate that we are paying is lower so that we can maximize on this collection that we are doing. And then the next slide, we have traveling and accommodation at 24%. This was also, I've spoken about it earlier on when I was speaking about the key highlights. The fingerprints are 22% above budget because of the registration that assisted us to cap our deficit at 4%. And then audit fees, also we have a responsibility to improve our internal control. We appointed an internal audit firm, and they've conducted that our internal control review to improve our control environment, and also AGSA have performed the interim audit, and I think it assisted us a lot to be prepared for the year-end audit. And then the next slide is financial position. The financial position, it states that there you'll see that we have now used those figures to prepare the ratio analysis. You can notice that our debtors ratio is 86%, and then it has also affected our equity ratios. And then the working capital is 0.9 and 0.90, and quick ratio is 0.90, which means that we are funding our, we should have a rent for every debt that we have, but we have 90 cents. So if you add those 90 cents, you can see where our 4 million and accumulated loss is coming from. And then we also have staff cost as a percentage of expenditure. You can see it grew from 53% to 58%. We, as an organization, as I said earlier on, that we want to capacitate our core business, and this is our main cost driver in our budget. I think I've explained slide number 43. This is our debt ratio. This shows how long do we indicate how funds, how the entity funds its operation. If you look, if you remember the slide that I projected earlier, we had reserved over the years, and over the years, over 3 years, you notice that our reserves are depleting. So this indicates that we're funding our debts from our reserve. If you look at the 21 million that we had in quarter three, and then we don't have it in quarter four, that means we took the reserves and then funded ourselves from that. But our reserves have depleted, and that's why we need to change the funding model. And then note number 23, working capital ratio, I've already spoken about it, that we, for every rent of current liabilities, we have 91 cents. So if we happen if we have to fund our current liabilities, we are short 9 cents per pay, and you notice that our current liabilities are also higher. And then debtors collection day, the entity takes 106 days to collect debtors, and then staff cost ratio is 58%, and then we want to change the ratio under law enforcement to improve enforcement to 1:120. And the conclusion is the current quarter four against predetermined objective is 77%. However, we're hoping after the audit will change the one KPI for unqualified audit to be green, and will move to 82%. And management and the council is confident that entity will achieve an unqualified audit. CIRA has intensified its internal control. They've employed internal audit, and through audit committee and FinCo, we have intensified our combined assurance, and there's a robust discussion to ensure that the entity achieves an unqualified audit opinion and improve its internal control. The last one is CIRA is fully aware of the financial status, and we are at implementing the reviewing the current funding model to address the financial challenges that we're facing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is that the presentation?
The presentation, Chairperson.
Two issues on my side, and then I'll go to the rest of the members. The first issue is the issue of your financial sustainability. Now, we see the swings from a very good plus surplus to a deficit. Now, my question is, what unit in your organization is the board or the ManCo or budget control committee who looks at your cash flow? Because, for instance, if you in quarter three sees you're not doing well in terms of debt collection, you must cut down on your traveling and your accommodation, you must cut down on your consultancies, you must cut on the nice-to-haves. If I look also at your debt collection percentage, it's historic debt.
you're not really, are you really going to get that back? I mean, should you write, what's your write-off policy? Can we just get an indication? And who's doing your debt collection? I mean, it's clearly if you had good debt collection strategies, you wouldn't have a deficit. That is just reality. The second issue is just the current cash and transits. Of course, next Wednesday we're going to have that interaction with yourselves and other role players. But I just want to get a sense from the director. In 2007, when there was also this peak, there was very good cooperation between SAPS and the different role players, CIRA, SABRIC. What is the trend this last 2 years? Did that structure came loose? Can you maybe just give us an indication? Let's go to the members. Honorable Mabija. Thank you. Honorable Molabasi.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry for that. My first question, can you remind us why the private security industry levies Act 2002 has not been in operation? My second one, in our interaction, previous interactions with you, you had an unhealthy relationship with SACITA. What is the situation as of now? My third one, you in the past you had some monies that were paid into Sira's account that were untraced, kind of. What is the situation regarding those monies? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In slide 37, the staff cost as a percentage of expenditure is increased by 3%. Will you please indicate whether this is due to an increase in personnel or general increase in cost of employees? What strategy is in place to augment the revenue to offset increased personnel cost? My second question, will you please indicate what firearms are used by security guards in the cash in transit sector? What is the standard of readiness for these firearms? E.g., are they of safety mode or ready to fire? My third question is the SIRA Amendment Bill. Will you please indicate whether any progress has been made in terms of the future of the SIRA Amendment Bill 2012? Did you consult with the new Minister of Police or the President? Thank you, Chairperson.
Mula, Honorable Bailey.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the colleagues. I'm sorry I was slightly late. I was. All right, let me get myself. Okay. My three questions, very simple and straightforward questions, come from two slides in the financial overview section, just slides 44 and 43 and 44. At face value, the figures given of the debt equity and working capital ratios are scary, I mean, one does understand and remember that it's historic debts, but at face value, they would be cause for concern. Any financial manager of a company or somebody handling the money of a household, if they were faced with these kinds of figures in their financial recons, would be very anxious. But I suppose the real question or the key question is whether the debt and the payment thereof is sustainable, right? So basically, with every debt repayment obligation, when the deadline comes, there was mentioned that there's been dipping into the reserves. But when the deadline comes, do we have the wherewithal to meet each of those obligations? Because I think that's the key thing. I always remember from having read Richard Branson's autobiography that he talks about how for the first couple of years Virgin Atlantic was always on the brink of, well, always in the red. But the fact is, as long as you are able to maintain to meet your debt repayment commitment each time it comes up, you can slowly claw your way out. So that's my key interest. Secondly, from slide 44, in terms of the staff costs ratio, it's indicated as being 58%. Could we just get an indication of what should be the optimal staff cost benchmark? What's the percentage that you would be aiming for to be able to say, okay, now we're at a now we're in an optimal place? Because I think I know SAP's benchmarks themselves at 75, 76. I'm not sure if you think your environment would indicate a different figure. And then linked to that, where the goal is to improve the inspector security ratio to 1 to 120, where are you now then? And how long do you think it would take you to move towards achieving that ratio? Thanks, Chair.
Bailey, Honourable Kalabona.
Thank you, Chair. Just to move into the real world for a moment, what is the protocol with CIRA in terms of private investigators? They're springing up all over the place, people advertising, I'm a private investigator. I'm presuming they must be registered with you, but what is the, I'm just receiving increasing numbers of complaints, where PIs, as they call themselves, take a large deposit and then disappear. Is there some protocol, some way people can come to you? If you could just lay that out for me, please. Yeah, I'm delighted that you're focusing more on inspections and you're hiring more people. Just fill us in on what the assistant inspectors do. Are they training to become inspectors? What is their role? And can you not afford another 20 or 30 or 40 of these people? Because that's, to me, a core mandate. And it's interesting that you've dished out 15 million rand in fines, and that didn't seem, that wasn't predicted. Are these in relation to perhaps the bad debts, people who have welched on their debts, so now you're fining them because they haven't paid, because if they haven't paid in the first place, they're certainly not going to pay any sort of fines that you dish out. What is that based on? And finally, your cash in transit training courses. From the citizens, civilians' perspective, we, I don't think, have seen any benefit at all. When we look at, I mean, it's like every day now, cash in transit heists, cash in transit heists. Security staff so traumatized, they need counseling. Explosives are popping those vehicles open like sardine cans. What is the status in terms, does a security guard have to pass a specific course with you on cash in transit before they're allowed to work in that regime? What is the actual status there? And can you tell us how many of them have been killed during the transport voyage, in the last year as compared to the previous 2 years? it seems to me we went through a stage where the perpetrators were, I recall well, pouring petrol over the vehicles and burning people alive. There were horrific cases some years back. Now it simply looks like it's as though an army is hit. They hit, blow, grab the cash, run. And I don't know that I've heard of security guards being killed, but certainly massively traumatized. I think I'll leave the rest for the others. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, with regard to slide 24, criminal cases opened against non-compliant security service providers. Is it possible that we can get the real figure? Maybe, if not possible now, maybe in future, the real figure, because percentage might not actually then give us a clear picture. The reason why, Chairperson, I'm raising this, I was listening attentively to the National Commissioner yesterday, indicating that seemingly there are some private security people that are involved in these cash hides. Now, from the hindsight, I am told that some of these private security companies, though it is illegal for foreigners to be enlisted as private security people, but there are some companies that are daringly just employing these people. Now, I think based on this question of national security, now which I think this committee chairperson will have to take very strongly into account, is it possible that we can get these figures and possibly also get the names of these companies that are actually then remaining non-compliant with the CERA regulations, so that this committee will be appraised as to what steps will be taken to deal with them. Because we cannot keep people in the service of the country, because these people, though they are private, making money for themselves, but their services are actually then complementing security of the country. Even only if they are not complying with the rules of engagement, it means they are putting the country at risk, security-wise. Now, is it possible that we can get these things? First of all, the real figures, and also maybe the names of these companies, so that we can be clear about them. Still there, then, Chairperson, you know, we visited a case at Cleveland's hostel. People were right from long time ago complaining that that security company called Secureco is complicit in the assassination of people. And it came just as an allegation then. But of late, one of the security personnel of that company, as we speak, is behind the bars for being directly involved in the assassination of our people in that community. Now, what, and we're talking about not just a former Secureco employee, active member of the Secureco company. That company which has got direct relationship with the mayor of Ethekwini, Zandile Gumede. Now, what steps are taken, not just against this individual, but against the company as a whole, because our people have been raising the alarm bells about this, that Sekurego is complicit in the murder of the people there. But nobody has been giving a hearing to the people. Now, these are the very, very boiling questions which I think they actually run on the face of all of us to say, are we going to get these security companies actually doing as they please? I cannot go to the question of Pietermaritzburg war zone and other areas somewhere in Johannesburg where these security companies simply open fire to the people in broad daylight, killing people without even any valid reason. Now, because to me that goes side by side with the question of compliance with the rules of engagement. Now, can we get these companies so that we deal with them? Then, Jefferson, you know, there is this question of a so-called reluctance by service providers to train these security people for them to be in compliance with the NQF, which I think to me, Jefferson, the people who are in the industry, it is of benefit to them if and only if they have got accredited certificates. Then, because it secures their future to be professionally recognized as security. Now, if and only if there is this particular snail pace or reluctance to get them trained, so that it can actually then add value in terms of their employability in higher places. Has there been an attempt to actually check this kind of reluctance? Because this kind of reluctance, finally, it will actually lead people to actually then getting other ways of accumulating money outside the regulated environment. Because then it means somehow this thing is perpetuating cheap labor deliberately because someone does not want to get people being professionally trained so that they can be recognized as trained security personnel with valid certification, which can be used for them to open some doors to go anywhere where they want to. And I think, as Sira, what are the steps that are you taking in order to ensure that you deal with this reluctance? Because if these people are registered to render this service of training our people to attain these to attain these qualifications, and then there is reluctance, it means someone somewhere is actually controlling these things deliberately. Then there is this downward. I'm worried if you go to page 39 that you are saying that though I'll talk after this about this, that an increase in cash deposit due to renewal of certificates. When people are renewing their certificates, aren't you also generating revenue? If then you are generating revenue, how can then that be actually part of your decline in your income? Because to me, I think that will be an opposite of what ought to be. Because even only if there is a big volume of people that are renewing, and you are generating income out of that, that should actually shoot up your income rather than expenditure. I don't understand how does it match that thing. If it can be explained so that we can actually have a clear understanding, then still on that, Jefferson, which I think there has been a lot of complaints that I received even here in Cape Town. When people are coming for these renewals, traveling as far away from George straight to Cape Town, because the only office of SIRA that exists is in Cape Town. So if you can count how many kilometers from Cape Town to George, or from George to Cape Town, it's such a very, very long distance. You even need a flight to move from here to George. Now, creating a kind of a stampede right here in Cape Town, and I think the same has been if you go to Durban, though then I think your office that you opened in Empangeni, to me, is somehow mitigating that, but to get people moving from as far as Newcastle to Durban for renewal, I think is a punishment of the worst order. It's too far. From Ladysmith to Newcastle is 100 kilometers, which means from Newcastle to Durban is almost times three, just a single route, a single journey. And that person needs to come back. And those people, the queues, Chairperson, are said to be very, very unmanageable. Now, what is being done in terms of this kind of deployment of these offices? Even if it is just for that peak moment, in order to actually ensure that we alleviate this kind of a problem, because these problems are reported quite frequently during the peak season of these renewals. I think, Chairperson, that will have to be actually discussed, because I personally, I ended up going to these offices in Cape Town. I saw it myself. People saying that I've been here at 9 o'clock at about 4 or quarter to 5 in the afternoon because of the very long queues that are totally unmanageable. Now, and I think as SIRA, there must be a way of actually then coming up with a solution in order to intervene to this particular situation. I would like just to end there, Chairperson, for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question on the something was said about the multiple employment. I just want to understand what does that exactly mean, and in terms of the registration, because seemingly that affects the annual fees. If I was to understand what exactly does that mean. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mark. Yeah, the moonlighting clause.
That's right.
Right, let's go to SIRA. Thank you, members. SIRA.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the financial sustainability of the organization, I think let me just give a bit of a background so that we understand where we are in terms of the issue of annual fees. Chairperson, you recall that currently how we raise revenue is we look at the number of security officers employed by a security company. So year in, year out, what we do is we look at the trends. Obviously, the industry grows, so there will be new security officers that are registered. There will be a growth in terms of the disclosure. So at the center of it all is how many security officers are disclosed by security companies. We have in our database a total of 2.1 million plus security officers, but only those that are disclosed as being actively employed in the industry is just around 500. Now, if you look at how we then look at the 500, we then look at the 500 and determine what annual fees these companies should be paying based on the 500. Now, you've got categories of security companies. You've got the large ones, the smaller companies, you've got large ones, and you've got medium, and you've got the largest. Now, if you look at a group of security companies that employ the largest part of the industry is the smaller companies, right? If you look at the number of, an average number of security officers they employ per security company, you find is between 0 to 5. Now, plainly those are companies that are registered with us but do not
necessarily have tenders that are, you know, they are running, but they still have to pay us. If you look at the majority of the market in terms of the private security industry is sitting with the larger companies, medium to larger companies, which means that, Chairperson, when there's pressure in terms of the payment, the pressure will be felt by the smaller companies. So that is where you find a problem in terms of the collection. So we use that data to then say, this is what we're going to build this year, and this is what we're going to collect. Now, year in, year out, our bad debt has been increasing. Why is it increasing? Because we're trying to collect a lot more money from smaller companies that are unable to pay us. So which is where the problem. But so this model is not sustainable in the long term, which brings us to where we are right now. But in terms of where we are as an entity right now, remember that every year when we raise these fees, we raise it around April. So towards the end of March, which is the fourth quarter, you will see a deadline in terms of the payment, and then the deadline, the increase will pick up again from April, May, and June, towards in terms of the collection of revenue. So we will post a deficit, the cash flow will go down, but it will go up again. So to give an example, we closed with a deficit in March in the cash flow of, I think we had about 6 million rand. Immediately in a month afterwards, we've got about 50-something million already in the bank. So that means that because we've raised fees again, so they start paying towards December, and then it declines again towards the end of the financial year. So that has been the trend. But of course, we are saying this model is not sustainable. We will talk to you about what models, what is it that we're doing in terms of the changes. And of course, it will also take us to the question, the answer to the question, what has happened to the issue of the Private Security Industry Levies Act. The second question, Chairperson, was what is your write-off policy? Are we writing off? Yes, we are writing off, but we look at, before we write off, there's a lot of things that we look at. We look at the ability of that company to pay. We look at how long it has not been paying us. We write off debt that is primarily over 3 years, that is not collectible legally, but we still try to collect that part of the debt. There's a lot of measures that we took. We've partnered with the state attorney to ensure that we issue summonses now. For the first time, we started, I think, last year, issuing summonses against individuals that have owed us. And we see that is also not working very well, because part of that debt, I think we had a debt of about 58 million. 32 million of that debt is prescribed. In other words, it's uncollectible. So we also taking that amount, giving it to other companies to try to collect on our behalf, as well as utilizing also internal staff to chase the debt that is not collectible. And we also ensuring that we are able to blacklist some of the people that are actively involved in the industry and are not paying us, so that we fast track. So there's a lot of measures, and all of these measures we are reviewing as to whether are they yielding any progress or not. So there is a write-off that is taking place, Chairperson. Chairperson asked also about the cash in transit over the years and what has been the...
Sorry, Director, just one question you still need to address the issue. What internal mechanism do you have in place to monitor this cash flow situation? And I mean that the management can know, I mean the fourth quarter, traditionally we're going to run into trouble. Let's cut the let's say travel and consultancies and advertisement, those kind of items.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, my apologies there. I think I've short-circuited my answer when I was talking about the quarters and the rise of the collections. Chairperson, almost towards the third quarter or the second quarter, we're able to tell what is the collection rate, whether we are spending a lot more money than we are collecting, and we're able to flag it. Internally, we have a budget committee. We review this expenditure, so we're able to take measures. We then take these measures, like cost cuttings. You will see there's a lot of cost cutting measures we took, and I think specifically with regard to these terms, we even went to our audit committee and said to them, look, we are now having a lot of negative cash outflows, so we are deploying measures. First of all, we then said to council, we might have to consider reducing expenditure on travel and accommodation, the entire council then took a decision that council and everyone else will then start flying economy, will then start monitoring even the travel to you know, stakeholders like parliament, will have a reduced number of travel. And so it's a lot of measures. But we do have internal kind of measures that we look at and oversight, like your finance committee, your audit committee, and up to council. So we do not only report and monitor these figures, but we also add measures to try to reduce them. But Jefferson, there's expenditure that you cannot necessarily, you know, that is fixed, that you can't even tamper with. So we try by all means that we look at those that are variable and try to vary them. But remember that when you increase the number of maybe the registration, there will be number of deposits, so the bank fees will increase. So if you step up your enforcement, the travel costs will also go up. So but we do have adequate measures to look at those measures. Jefferson, the third question was around the trend. What has been the trend in terms of the relationship? Maybe just to put it broadly, Jefferson, we think that the relationship, there has been a working relationship between SABC and SACS and the other stakeholders in terms of dealing with the issue of cash and transit. Perhaps somewhere along the line that, you know, there has been lack of that very inclusivity in terms of dealing with these issues that I think I'm unable to say whether there's been any active, for instance, operations between SABC and SAPS. I think they would be best people to deal with. We've conducted the research, but the research showed that perhaps that working relationship was not very strong in the past years or so. Perhaps that needs to be looked at much more closely in terms of dealing with this type of issues, like cash in transit. Chairperson, there was also a question regarding why the Levies Act, why was it not enacted? Chairperson, I can only take a guess that in the beginning, when the Act was signed, there was problems in terms of, you would recall that pre-2010, there was lots of problems with the management of the entity itself. Ranging from mismanagement of funds to all sorts of things, then we corrected it. But when we came on board post 2010, we looked at the Act and we said we can actually deploy this Act. What was lacking at the time was the policy direction in terms of how are you going to deploy. But at the same time, we could not do that because we were concentrating at restructuring, turning around the organization at the time. So we then went out, I think, in the number of years afterwards to do benchmarking in order to build policy to put that in place. We are certain at the moment that we have put enough you know, literature around to be able to come up with a policy direction in terms of implementing the Levies Act as we are. So the answer is there's been lack of policy direction in terms of what and how this should be implemented, because we couldn't find any at the time when we needed to do that. The relationship with Sasita Chairperson,
Honourable Kalabona.
Just a point of clarity now. So I listened to the explanation, so we're talking a very long period of time. Okay, 2002, I think it was passed. So we're heading for 20 years down the line. And I listened to your explanation, but does this mean you are beginning to implement? Have you begun to implement the tenets of that Levies Act or not? And if you haven't, when? Are we waiting another 20 years? I'm not sure what the, you know, what the status is, because certainly it's an act. It can't simply be passed by the president and then ignored.
Thank you, Chairperson. We from next month, Chairperson, we'll be publishing a consultation document that will be dealing with the implementation of the Levies Act. We basically want to give the industry a year So we're planning to implement from the 1st of April 2019 to implement the Levies Act. So we're also planning to ask the President to sign it into law, to sign it to into operation from September this year. So they will have basically 6 months towards the implementation of that. So yes, we are implementing it now. Thank you, Chairperson. The relationship with SACETA, yes, in the past we came and reported that it wasn't very well. I think we have since had a number of meetings. We've recently had a meeting with the new acting CEO. The relationship is slowly improving, but we still believe that there is a lot of clarity that needs to be, given to the various stakeholders in terms of what is the role of CIRA, what is the role of SACETA. But we see ourselves going forward as improving that relationship. We can announce that I think recently there is a board that has been, a new board that has been put in place. There is still an acting CEO, but in that board as well, when the nominations were done, we nominated some individuals there. They are part of that board, so we think that will also improve the relationship. We're also looking forward to participate in the chambers representing the private security industry, so we think that relationship will improve going forward. There was also a question regarding the issue of unallocated and untraced funds. That was something of the past. You recall that, Chairperson, in the past we struggled quite a lot.
Director, on Moklongo?
No, maybe still there, Chairperson. I think with regard to that particular point, Director, Chairperson, you recall that this particular thing is actually then embodied within the basic conditions of employment, if I'm not mistaken. And now, which then talks to the question that we'll say, is there a way that has been put in place or tried to put in place the question of these committees, these structures that are supposed to be in place like the Equity Act, because these things are going to go a very long way in addressing even the imbalances of the past that exist in this country, which I think are even clearing as you are talking about the question of levies and what implementation, Levies Act and all these things. But these, do you have maybe a kind of these committees? I think you need an equity committee that finally then will then drive this whole thing of the what do you call this kind of drawing the kind of a direction that the institution must take of the security industry in terms of empowerment of these people, leading up to the training at a SACWA level of them. Do you have these structures, and how are they formed, knowing that these things are just so much fragmented and all that thing? And I am also reminded of that meeting, Chairperson, that we had between some emerging security industries and the traditional security industry, which actually proved that the imbalances in this kind of a sector are quite deep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I think if I understand the question very well, it was regarding the committees within CIRA or SACETA. So I got a sense that it's a bit of both. Chairperson, within CIRA, we do have governance committees, which we have one specific one that deals with stakeholder and core business, that looks at our core business. And of course, we also intending to establish
sector committees that will be looking at specific sectors of the industry, which will also address issues of training and so on. But within SACITA itself, there are chambers and working committees and other committees that looks at the training, specific trainings within the industry, yes, which we are planning to participate on in those chambers as well. I'm sure if that addresses the question. Chairperson, if I may go ahead, in terms of the issue of unallocated funds, it's because we could not trace. I think we have done very well in that area. We no longer have that as a problem, Chairperson. The kind of relationship that we've made with the banks in terms of improving the identification of all the deposits and enforcing the rules around the deposits and so on, so have seen us controlling those numbers. It's not that you will adequately get rid of it. The most important thing is that it needs to be materially within a particular threshold that is justifiable in terms of your materiality with the AG and how you disclose your revenue. So we are adequately dealing with that aspect. Chairperson, there was also an issue about the staff costs that was asked by Honorable Mola in terms of the increase. Why is it also increasing the personal costs, and what can be done to reduce those costs? Chairperson, that's a bit of a difficult one. Staff costs are increased by both the cost of employing people as well as the benefits that people have. But I think the question is, what can we do to keep them at a particular level, and what would be the ideal level? For a service delivery organization, it's quite very difficult, because if you target a percentage of your staff cost, it should be sitting at your core business, right? So we're looking at increasing the number of inspectors. So if you look at increasing the number of inspectors, that staff cost will grow. But perhaps what we should be saying is, at what percentage should that be sitting relative to your expenditure, which then addresses the other question in terms of the 58% that we have. What is the going percentage around? What is the best benchmark around that? And what is it that we are intending to do to ensure that perhaps our staff cost sits at a core business? Chairperson, I must say that we are intending to restructure an area around registration and training, in particular registrations. What we intend to do, because we have two problems there. We've got a problem that will address the issue of queues. We've got a problem that will address the issue of staff costs going up, because we'll also address the issue of the footprint. We intend to bring in online registration, which will see us reducing in terms of increasing the number of staff that dealing with registration itself. So basically, the whole process will change in the future. We're working on it. We're a few months away from it in terms of deployment. So we also planning to decentralize some of the processes that are dealt with by CIRA. To give you an example, Chairperson, instead of us accepting all the documentation, because you'll be registering online, most of the information that we require from you will have been done online already. So we will decentralize, for instance, issues of the validation of your ID as well as your fingerprints to a service provider. We will accredit service providers around the country in certain areas which will be doing the validation. So basically, will be more like your, if I were to give an example to that, if you do lottery, for instance, lotteries, you'll find it almost everywhere, because certain vendors have been accredited to do so. So they will have basically our computer, our validation documents and everything. So there's nothing that they will control, except that all the equipment will be ours. They will be doing validation at those areas. So that will mean that we will not have to sit with opening offices all around the country, increasing the admin costs and so on. So that's how we plan to do with it. But we'll give a much more better picture when we come to that point in the future.
Director, maybe just a follow-up there, because the point raised by Honorable Shlongu is correct. I mean, if entrance to the industry is discouraged due to those distances, I mean, you're talking online, it's the second generation, but I mean, you've got this bank that advertises now, you can send your selfie and they will open your bank account. So are you also looking at tertiary you know, technology, cell phones and so on to, for registration purposes? I just want to get a sense that you're not behind the trend, but you must be ahead of the trend.
Yes. Chairperson, we're actually looking at deploying an app. We should have deployed it by now. The challenge is the finding the correct supplier to assist us with that, and the one that can do it quicker. Of course, the technology is there. So part of the app will be able to also register. But in order to deal with the queues, maybe I should also answer that question. The app will be allow us to book. We have tested a part of the functionality. We've actually developed the functionality. It's working. It has been tested and stress tested, where security officers will book for almost every service that they do. Because the challenge that we had right now is that security officers changed their contact numbers, the cell phones, almost every time. So when we communicate with them and say, come and collect your certificate, they don't get the message. So when we say, come and roll out certificates, they all come thousands, and our offices can't handle 1,000. So we tried by all means to handle this. So we are going to force all of them now to book in order to come for a service so that we can control those numbers according to the numbers that we can take a day and so on. So we are getting there, Chairperson, in terms of the technology. I think in the next few months, we will do it by phases, but in the next year or a few months, we'll start first with the booking system, the accreditation system, the online registration, all of that will finally be state of art going into the future, which we hope will resolve quite a lot of problems. There was also a question about what sort of firearms are used by cash in transit. Chairperson, there's handguns and semi-automatic rifles and many other equipments like your tear gases, like your stunts, tear gases and so on that are used. Those are mainly the types that they are used currently. They are not allowed to use full automatic rifles and many other rifles that are used by the likes of your armies and so on. The question around the Amendment Act, Chairperson. The Amendment Act, the last that we had from there was that we should be sending, the President was looking at the comments that were sent by people who were lobbying against the Act. That was the last that we had, but we made an inquiry. Certainly, yes, we did have a discussion with the current minister in terms of what we need in terms of that act and that it needs to be put in place. And of course, we're looking forward to traction around that aspect in the near future. So this is...
Thank you. This is just a follow-up from Honorable Mullah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Which president, the current one or the former one?
At the time, it was the former president, and of course, the current inquiries will be made with the current president of the country. Chairperson, there was also the number of complaints that are received in terms of the. Let me just see. In terms of cash in transit, I think. Investigations, yes. We've got 2,996. I think it was the question related to investigation of criminal cases. Yes. those that were finalized, we had 2,296 complaints that we carried out, and 1,988 were finalized, meaning that 87% of those criminal cases were finalized. Chairperson. I'm just looking at the questions that have not been answered. The staff ratio.
I'm not sure that you actually have the figures to hand, but of the, what was it, 2,200, yes? Or 2,200 cases against security guards? 96.
That we finalized, 1,000?
Yes, 2,296 cases against security guards. Could you give an indication of, okay, you've completed about half of them.
The security service providers.
Okay, the actual, well, then against the companies whose person, okay, so these are criminal cases against the companies. Can you tell us what the cases were? Was it for non-compliance or was some actually committing crimes? I'm a bit confused by this criminal cases.
My apologies, Chairperson. I think maybe I might have come across as revealing. We talked about complaints and we talked about criminal cases. In terms of the criminal cases, 960 criminal cases were opened for investigations in that year. 96% of them were completed. In the main, the type of criminal cases that we're referring to is for illegal practices. So those are companies that are operating illegally, also employing people that are not registered with us. Chairperson, there was also a question around the ratio.
Sorry, Chairperson. May I please know, Chairperson, because I think it's important that we get maybe the name if for the future, the names of these security companies, so that we can be able to monitor the repeat offenders and all these things in terms of non-compliance. Going forward towards deregistration of them. Because keeping such organizations that are deliberately not complying with the rules of engagement, to me that's a criminal offense. Serious, serious criminal offense. Because it means they are hiding something. Thanks.
Member, yes, Director, you can go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are able to supply those names at a later stage, all of those that we've opened criminal cases against. Chairperson, there was also, I think the issue of sustainability, I've addressed it from Honourable Mbele indirectly when I addressed the other question. But second to that was whether are we able to meet our obligations? Yes, we are able to meet our obligations. Remember, these numbers that we're talking to is numbers that were effective on the 31st of March. As we speak right now, we are able to meet our obligations. There was also a question about the ratio that we wanted. Currently, it's sitting at 1:2. I think we have one inspector looks at over 200 companies alone, and we want to bring that ratio to 1:120. That's the idea, I think, 1:122, Chairperson. There was also a question about assistant inspectors. Assistant inspectors do inspections like ordinary inspectors. It's just a lower level of, in terms of seniority, but they do certain inspections, including inspections of individuals and companies. And the reason we went that route was to actually do the same, be able to hire as many as possible because of assistance inspectors. In terms of their payments, we were able to target quite a bigger number of them. The question around private investigators. Chairperson, private investigators must be registered with CERA. There is a specific code of conduct that deals with private investigators. Just to enlighten members, Chairperson, one of the rules of the Code of Conduct is that when you hire a private investigator, the contract between you and the private investigator first must be in writing, and when you pay for any services, the private investigator must be able to give you a report. And there is no private investigator that will be allowed to go and conduct any private investigations Murumutu or on its own without being mandated by anyone. So why is that the case? Is because we wanted to ensure that there's adequate protection of people's rights in terms of privacy and so on. And if you go through the Code of Conduct itself, Chairperson, you'll notice that it is so strict in terms of what they need to do and what they can't do, and also in terms of surveillance and so on. So all of those complaints need to be pushed to us to investigate.
Labachi, follow up. Thank you.
The company called Sullivan and Associates is registered, Mr. Chairperson. But in terms of the registration, Mr. O'Sullivan is not the owner. The registered owner is another person who's the registered owner. He is, I think, one of the people who might be working for this company.
Other follow-up, Honorable
Colibana?
If you could just tell me, all right, if people come to me, what is the exact procedure? Who do they, if they're writing you a letter, I mean, is it on your website? Who do they email it to? Who do they address it to? Because, as I say, I'm being sent stuff, and I don't know how to tell individuals to get a request to you to investigate Mr. X.
I guess Chairperson, we've got various ways in which they can lodge complaints with us. They can either phone our offices or they can send an email to our info line. Our complaints lines is also on the website. And they can also, if they want to remain anonymous, go to a anonymous hotline that we have. We have a relationship with KPMG, which is administers the anonymous hotline, which
also
they can lay a report
website.
On the website as well. We are able to investigate all of those matters.
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't hear you correctly. You said Paul O'Sullivan is registered, but there's a person who's registered, not him. Is that person a South African or what? Or is he working with Paul O'Sullivan? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, we haven't really investigated those matters, but I know for a fact we've looked at the relationship. Whether the company itself is registered. Yes, the company is registered. All I'm saying is that as one of the directors that are registered, Paul O'Sullivan is not one of the directors that are registered in terms of their business. But the name, it says Paul O'Sullivan and Associates. I think it's a female person who is a South African that is registered in terms of the directors of his company.
The other responses, thank you, Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was also a question, why the increase in terms of fines? What were the fines? Remember, Chairperson, that we have increased fines from 10,000 to up to 1 million. So the increase in terms of fines is, that is the traction that is gaining in terms of the fine. And we are not fining companies that are not paying us, but we do fine. But these fines are for all sorts of non-contraventions that the security service providers find themselves in.
Just on the payback of those fines, or the paying of those fines, I mean, is it the same scenario as with your bad debts in terms of registration, or is there a better, let's say, compliance in terms of the fines? Thank you.
Chairperson, there is better in terms of the fines, but we have zoomed into that area right now. Where we looked at most of the fines were settled in between the CELA prosecutors as well as the service providers, and we found out that the settlements were around an average of 7,500 when the fine is now up to 1 million. So we've reviewed the policies in terms of the guidelines, how they should be looking at the fines, and we have basically taken away some of the discretions that they have in terms of that. So we will see an improvement in terms of those fines. There was a question about the CIT training and what it entails.
Sorry, Honourable Mabi, just thank you, Director.
Just microphone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to understand this clearly before we go too far about this whole
registration issue. You made mention of the fact that you haven't investigated, but what you have is 1, 2, 3. Do you have a mandate to investigate a SIRA on the registration nitty gritty? Because the way you explained it, I'm not 100% satisfied. There's something that is not correct, according to my little knowledge concerning how you deal with issues at SIRA. So if you have the mandate, may you please come back with something concrete that we are worried about police, Paul O'Sullivan in the iPad. So we need to know precisely what is it that is cooking in the big pot. I don't know whether you get the gist of my,
Chairperson, perhaps you may be the director, thank you. Perhaps what I've meant to say there is that we did not receive any specific complaint to say that we were investigating Mr. Oliver Solomon as a person. But I'm quite aware that the police in the past were looking into his relationship with IPIT and whether he was registered with us. So those inquiries might have been made. That's how I am saying that, yes, the company is registered. But we do have the full authority to investigate anyone who is registered with us. If we receive a specific complaint regarding that individual, we will indefinitely investigate. But in the criminal investigation, we also cooperate with the police in regard to what is intended, what is not intended.
Who are they lodging the complaint in this meeting? I was just saying that it's okay, then it means we are lodging that complaint to you to investigate in this matter, because we have a challenge.
So that must be the right thing. Yes, Honorable Mubula, thank you. Right, the director, you can continue, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll look into that when it comes to us from the committee, Chairperson. Chairperson, there was also a question in regard to the training of CIT. What does the training entail? Chairperson, in terms of the training, the security officers who are involved in CIT needs to be registered first as security officers. They need to be trained as ordinary security officers. Then they then undergo a specific training called cash in transit training. If I were to perhaps assist with the content of that type of training, Chairperson, as grade E, D to C, the training would entail self-defense too, would entail written reports, occupational safety, threat and risk, and bomb threats. And then when it comes to the cash in transit itself, it will also go into issues like protection of information, role of the emergency, role in emergency, fire prevention and protection, legal aspects, and of course, looking at the other aspects as well. So specific to CIT, it will be risk, operational procedures, discipline, behavior, introduction of bullion, as well as cash in transit auditing and documentation. So that's in the main what the course entails, Chairperson. And currently in the country, we have almost 70,000 security officers who are trained in terms of cash in transit, specialized training. And as to whether how many have been killed, Chairperson, we do not have an exact number. And the reason for that is that there is no obligation currently for security service providers to report those numbers to us. You will recall that with the Amendment Act that is sitting before the President, we've made provision for that obligation to be enacted in terms of the Act so that we are able to get a report in regard to fatalities in the private security industry as a whole. So currently we can request those numbers, but they will be under no obligation to supply them to us if they think that it will be a cost to them. We've dealt with the issue of the criminal cases, Chairperson. I think there was a specific question from Honorable Mhlongo regarding Cleveland and the mentioning of a security company. Honorable Chairperson, I must say that I'm not aware of the complaint, but I must say that in almost all the incidents that were in the public domain, which involved security companies, whether be it in shootings, in taxi ranks, political killings and so on, all of those incidents have been investigated by us. Perhaps what we also need to enlighten the committee is the procedure in terms of us having to deal with them when there are allegations of this nature. Normally, depending on the facts and the allegations, we would then invoke a section where we then say to them, we intend to suspend their registration because of the following allegations. Then they have an obligation to tell us why we shouldn't do so. So it's a legal process, and depending on the investigations, because we don't just suspend, we have to have a reason in law that they've contravened the code and before we suspend. So most of those matters, we are currently dealing with them, and specifically regarding the matter and the shooting in a taxi rank in KZN, I think we are nearing our investigations, that one, and so we'll be taking action. The Brakpan one, we're also on to that one. We're also nearing our investigation with that. We've already issued letters in all of them of intention to suspend those people. So we are dealing adequately with those matters in the public domain. But we will also investigate the issue of security corps, and I hear it for the first time here. I'm not aware if the police have reported that matter. The reluctance of members to join training, Chairperson, I think there was a bit of a misunderstanding what I meant there. I was not referring to security officers per se. I was referring to security service providers who are in training in the NQF level training. Basically, the complaints there by members have been NQF level training, the training is intensive and it's very expensive to render. So basically, people who are accredited to train those training do not make a lot more money when they are accredited. Therefore, they do not, you know, see any need. But the question was, what are we doing to address the issue? Chairperson, we've been constantly in contact with the stakeholders in the industry. The industry have said to us that they actually want to look at the moratorium in regard to the accreditation of new training service providers being uplifted by CIRA to train grades. So we will be doing that, and I think in the next month, in this month, in June, we're looking at uplifting the moratorium and attracting more training providers to be accredited to do training in the industry so that we improve that number as well.
Sorry, did I just say you've had a moratorium on registering the people, the companies that train security officers? When did you implement this moratorium, and why would you implement? I mean, I thought the law was, if you're involved in the security industry, you have to be registered. I didn't know it was you were registered, except for you, and we've got a moratorium on this and that and the next. I'm a bit confused about how that came about and when it came about.
Chairperson, let me just explain. You will recall that that the country established SACWA, and there were CETAs that were established, and there were CETAs that were established to also look at new training and professional training and so on. So basically what happened in this industry is that the industry took a position in the past with the regulator that we will now move into new training standards that involve unit standards. So CIRA at the time was accrediting training providers. So the moratorium was to say, let's stop accrediting new training providers who will train the old grade E to A, but then accredit new onto this new professional training. So that was the most. So then it meant that people who come to be accredited as new training providers will be accredited in terms of the new paradigm. So That was the moratorium all about. So now the industry realized that in terms of this new paradigm, we're not making money because the training is quite expensive. Nobody can afford it. So there was then a drive to go back to the old ones. So let's accredit the old and use it as an initial training, and people would then go on to the new training as an improvement to their current training. So that is where we are. So that's why we're saying we are now looking at lifting the moratorium to accredit more training providers will train the grades, and the people will then improve their training in terms of the new one. So that's what it is. Chairperson, I think I've answered most of the questions, including the question regarding what are we going to do in terms of addressing the queues. There was also a question of us explaining the multiple employment, what it meant. Chairperson, basically, we were saying there that we picked up that there were a lot of duplications of security officers, meaning that security officers will be disclosed to us by Company A on their books. And our system would have to bill Company A for the security officers that are disclosed. We also picked up that the same security company, security service officer or security officer was disclosed by another company. So the system did not bill both of them because we can't bill one person twice. So we then started investigating what happened. In most of the cases, Chairperson, we realized that those are the companies that were using illegal foreign nationals. So would basically steal the identities of other people who are already in the industry and use them as... So we are addressing those. And we're saying most of the reason why we did not get those fees that we were supposed to get was as a result of, amongst others, those type of tendencies by the industry. I think I've addressed most of the questions, Chairperson. I'm not sure if there's anything that I've left behind.
Yeah, there's a number of, yes, let's give the acting Chairperson an opportunity to respond. So a couple of us will come to you, members. Thank you.
I just wanted to amplify the question that was raised by Ms. Kola Barnard on the issue of training. If you look at the CIRA Act, Section 4K, I'll read. Section 4, the functions of the authority, and K, is to take such steps that may be expedient or necessary in connection with the training of security service providers and prospective service providers to ensure a high quality of training, and in particular with regard to 1, the accreditation and withdrawal of the accreditation of persons and institutions providing security training. I think that point is critical because it's within the mandate of the authority. But the problem that has happened before is how do you balance that with the existence of a subsidiary, and how do you make sure that those concurrent responsibilities, there's no confusion? And that has been a confusion before, but as the CEO has been presenting, we are taking our responsibility also in terms of playing a role in subsidiary, because you find that there's been more or less the service providers and the training companies not sure whether that is the role of CIRA or the role of subsidiary to play that role. And hence this confusion when we come to the portfolio committee previously, there's been that kind of confusion. But we've taken the responsibility of talking to each other and also understanding that there are these laws that are in place that give us also that authority as an organization.
Thank you. Yes, I see Honorable Mshlongu's hand. Yes, sir. And Honorable Bailey?
No, just... outside of this, but just for my own information, Chairperson. You know, I read, I think yesterday, that a former Israeli Defense Force soldier is training some farmers here in South Africa for self-defense. And our army here is a very professional army. if then, because we even had some reserve forces in the past, though, then it's something I don't want to venture in there. Now, but what I wanted to find out is this training controlled by you as CIRA, so that you don't just get people just doing anyhow? Because as you understand, the current situation between the country and that sister country, there, Israel, is not good at the moment because of our different positions that we cherish. Now, with this particular individual who's training our, mind you, security of our farmers is our collective responsibility as a nation. Whether they are white or black is our collective responsibility. But for this particular individual, is he or she under your control as this particular training? Any training, chairperson, to me, particularly when it pertains to defense, self-defense or whatever, it goes with ideology. Now, even only if we don't control these things, who controls it? Thank you.
Really? Thank you, Chair. Mine is a, I suppose you might call it a high-level, possibly even speculative question, but it's something that is on the radar, which is, you know, I do see from the fourth quarter reports, and I suspect the annual reports, when we consider that in sort of September, October will be the same, is that there is a track record of good shifts and improvements in terms of tactical adjustments on the part of the authority. You know, we're bringing down the historic debts. We are strengthening financial controls to course correct as the year comes along. Proceeds. We're strengthening the HR capacity to carry out core business. So on a tactical and call it short-term time frame, things, the needle is nudging in the right direction, and that's something to be acknowledged, because it's following years of chronic mismanagement. But my question comes from a more, like I said, high level, and call it strategic level, and that is, if you start connecting some dots that are on the horizon and, in fact, in front of us in some ways, things like baseline budget reductions across the board over the MTSF and certainly impacting on the SAPs. If you look at what I and many other people are characterizing as a shrinking SAPs, because we're getting that post-establishment reduction and cutting. And when you consider that after the Crime Intelligence Division has been hollowed out, compromised, captured, anywhere you put it, for at least 6 years, it might now start being in recovery, but it's going to be a long, long time of recovery, because the expertise, the capacity, the experience that it takes to build up to get to an effective and functional crime intelligence capacity is a very fragile and very long process. So that basically means the main tool we should have to tackle organized crime, organized violent crime, is just not there. I saw the chairperson was much kinder in his Chris Barron interview when he was asked those questions. I would have told Chris Barron it's an absolute shambles. They're just not there. So given connecting all those dots, and there's already been talk about this, is that the private security industry in various manifestations, whether you're talking guards, vehicles, technology, and that sort of thing, is going to remain a needed and likely proliferating feature on the landscape, mostly for the people who can afford it. And the director will be aware, I've been asking this question around how do we promote and facilitate low-income access to private security, but I know that's ongoing. But this is going to be like a big thing on the landscape and for most households. And I just want to know, from CIRA's strategic outlook even forecasting. Is that something that is on your radar, the idea that, or the notion that CIRA might become one of our most important public bodies or public entities in terms of overseeing, directing, regulating, and keeping accountable what is going to be a key sector in this country? You know, forget, for example, say, PRASA and Transnet. If PRASA can't keep those railways and the rail environment safe, as we've seen in the Central Line in Cape Town, and they must shut down for weeks on end, well, then there's no point in talking about the rail network. So the security dimension comes in there. If clinics in Hanover Park have to shut down for 3 days at a time because gang violence just makes the area, inoperable, the security dimension comes in, and all other infrastructure and service facilities then become nullified. So, you know, CIRA is going to be one of the key sort of cornerstones around making sure that as certain risks intensify and escalate, the markets and industry response to that has got to have the right regulatory eye on it. And I'm just wondering if the CIRA management and board have that kind of eye on the future, because we don't want to be caught unawares. We don't want the curveball to come around the corner and we aren't ready. And the last thing we need is a scenario where, you know, corners and enclaves of this country essentially get taken over by vigilante groups who are run by warlords, and because the SAP's capacity is insufficient, they literally can run their little fiefdoms without any with full impunity, and basically the rule of law becomes on paper only. Thanks, Chair.
Maybe just three quick ones from my side. Last week, the committee adopted the budget report with relation to CIRA, and there's just three things I just want to, because I don't know whether we're going to meet before the snap election in October. The one is the one relates to the issue of events, sporting events. Remember the interaction we had with the sporting codes? I just want to get an indication, is there any movement from your side now to become close involved? Any progress since the meeting with the sporting bodies or the sports committee? The second issue that we've raised previously at this committee is the issue of insignia and uniforms of private security. I still see the Air Force security guards at one institution or similar wear. You know, what is happening? Is there any progress with regard to that? And then I just want to get a sense before, as a preparation for our meeting next week, I think one of the recommendations of the committee that we adopted last week was that we also encourage CIRA to interact closely with the DPCI and SABRI going forward. Currently, are you engaging with the DPCI, or is it only with visible policing? I just want to get a sense of that. Yeah, members, any other questions? Honourable Malabatsi.
On the CIRA some vehicles, they are very close to SOPs and metro police. That's it.
Thank you, members. That will be the questions. Then we go to CIRA, Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with Honourable Mbele's question. Chairperson, the answer to Honourable Mbele is yes. From a strategic point of view, we're looking at CIRA as a big player in terms of providing oversight over the private security industry as a whole. We are certainly taking this responsibility very serious. We understand that there are security officers we need to protect the integrity and the safety of citizens. So we're looking at incapacitating CIRA adequately in future to be able to carry out that responsibility. As we are, you might recall that CIRA has given law enforcement powers, for instance, the power to arrest, the power to do searches and seizures and so on. But because of capacity, we're unable to do so. We depend on SAPS in most of the matters. So yes, the plan is to grow CIRA to that level. We are also planning to establish a guarantee fund which will ensure that there is adequate oversight and protection of the rights of users as well as the private security industry itself. And of course, a link to that is the building capacity of the regulator as an enforcement body taking over that responsibility. And I think we have that big outlook, Chairperson. We see more and more our responsibility and our role being questioned, and I think it's good traction. All the regulators around the country and around the world are held to account right now in terms of their areas of responsibility, in terms of holding people to account in the different areas. We're one of those as well. And certainly in our space, there's issues of misuse of firearms, which we are working into. There's also issues of the safety of public in terms of where firearms have been used, in the taxi violence, in all of those areas we're zooming into. But I think with good capacity, we can do better than this. With good publicity, we can also do better than this. So yes, the outlook is as you described it. Chairperson, the sporting activities, and since we've met, yes, Chairperson, I think I must say that since we've had that interaction, there is a lot more willingness on the sporting side to come to us. Remember that this is what we've been doing. But we have cautioned our team, Chairperson. Remember that our role is defined in terms of that act. So we do not want to find ourselves in the center of decisions that are taken, because we still have to provide oversight. So yes, we are. We have stepped up that oversight, including when we are invited to games, we do not go to those games. We go there as providing that oversight, Chairperson. So yes, I think we've stepped up that one. The issue of uniforms and insignia. Chairperson, we have regulations currently, but these regulations are not very, very adequate. For instance, we are unable to determine prior to registration whether we can actually control what insignias and so on, because the regulations don't require security service providers to come to us for approval. You will recall that the Amendment Act, amongst others, that is sitting with the President, was addressing that area as well, strengthening that area. So once that Act is approved, we will be dealing with the issue of uniform much more better than we are dealing with it right now. And the other challenge we have right now is that we're not getting as enough complaints as possible. So we are able to deal with them as in when we get those complaints. But as in when members see those misabuses, please, if they are reported to us, we will be able to deal with it. Working with the DPC, the Directorate for Priority Crimes, yes, Chairperson, I've met with the previous acting head of the Hawks around issues that we need to look into in the private security industry, including allegations that some of the robberies where, the employers were involved. I've raised those issues, and then she also, at the time, that showed me that they are looking at certain investigations in those areas. We are yet to meet the newly appointed head of the Hawks in order to strengthen that relationship. We've recently met also with the Special Investigations Unit to address some of the complaints that we've received about the private security industry, which we think that resides in the domain. And we are also going to be looking at meeting with the public protector, because we think there are certain areas that she needs to be looking into, which we cannot look into, in terms of certain abuses, because we're working with everyone to ensure that we look at our mandate. So the marking of the vehicles and so on, I think it is a matter that will be addressed in terms of that act as well when it comes to its insignias. But yes, as in when there are complaints, we are able to address those complaints. What we've seen recently is also an abuse of the lights by security companies. We must say that the current legislation does not allow security companies to have strobing lights. It's only the police can have that. So if as and when those are should be reported to us, we will address them with necessary information.
Thank you, Mr. Chowki. Honourable Morabachi, you've got a follow-up, and also Honourable Mabija.
Actually, it's not a follow-up, Chair, it's a new one. Tell us about the tell us about the injuries and death in the line of duty of God's fashion?
Honorable Bija?
You know, Chairperson, I just want to emphasize on the uniform issue. It's a serious thing. I'd like to give an example. On Sunday, when I was from Ulukwane meeting, going home, just after we stretched my card, we passed two, like soldiers, males, standing by the gate of a farm. So I thought, what do these soldiers want here? Is there something wrong here? And some passengers said, we ask it from you. You are a national rep, and we see you in police committee. Those are not soldiers. They are security company officers. So I'm trying to show you that how dangerous the uniform issue is. I felt so embarrassed because I'm the one. I was not supposed to be asking. I was supposed to be answering. That's my case.
Thank you very much. Honorable, you will be the last if there's no other questions. Thank you.
There was a question that I haven't answered.
No, there is a question that I asked regarding this IDF soldier.
Members, that's all the questions. Thank you, Director. Can you finish off us? Thank you.
Yes, Jefferson, we have also discovered that in the papers. Ordinarily, let me assure you that all the security training providers in the country, as long as you provide security training for close protection, for security, you need to be registered with CIRA. There's no two ways about it. We are investigating the specific one. I'm unable to say at the moment whether they are registered with us and so on. We've looked at it this morning. We've dispatched our team to look into it, and we will be providing feedback on that aspect.
Can I just double-check on that? Does that include dojos and martial arts trainers as being under your remit or not?
No. If you advertise that you are training people to do close protection, you are on our way.
Do you remember those declarations there? Your companies, your shareholding. No, the other responses, they will come to us at Acting Chair. Yeah.
I wanted to amplify on Honorable Mthongo's question. The training on the farms, that clip also was on the Sky News. And it was not portraying the country in a very good light. So we are not politicians ourselves. I think that's within your realm as politicians. But we'll just look at that issue. But it's something that is already out there in the international arena, that training issue. And it's quite a sensitive issue, the way it was also reported, because it's reported in a very bad light around the issue of security and safety in this country.
I also saw the report on the. I haven't seen the clip itself, but it's, yeah.
Chairperson, quickly on the issue of injuries and death of security officers. Chairperson, those, in terms of benefits, there is a provident fund for the private security industry which looks after that. So if security officers are on the provident fund of the industry, it makes provision for benefits in terms of injuries as well as in terms of death. Of course, there's also the compensation for the act that takes care of that as well.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we've come to the end of this portfolio committee meeting. We thank the report on the third and fourth quarter of CIRA. We take note of the issues. I think the members raised their concerns. There's also other feedback that we still need from them. So thank you very much. Members, just to indicate that tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock we will start with the courtlies. We will start with civilian secretariat at 9, IPIT at 11. We've got 4 hours, 2 hours each for each of the organizations. So thank you very much. This meeting is closed.
Okay.